This episode is brought to you by the Old Dominion Athletic Foundation. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Become a member today.
Monarch Nation, how are we doing? I am back with my co-host, Aaron. How are we doing today, buddy?
I'm awesome, man. It's cold as shit outside, but sorry, Libby. But it's awesome. Super Bowl Sunday, men's basketball, women's basketball, kicked some major butt last night. It's a good weekend.
Two and Ohio. All right, Justice, thanks for joining us today. How you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to stay warm, man. I'm up in Pennsylvania right now, and it's even colder up here. So, yeah.
So speaking of the Super Bowl. You guys make anything good tonight?
Well, I'm not making anything good, but I'm going to eat something good. Lisa's putting on a Mexican extravaganza, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
That's hilarious, Aaron, because that's what we're doing too, like fajitas, quesadillas, guacamole.
You can't go wrong with that. How about you, Mike?
I got a brisket on the smoker right now, so you're ready to pull in a couple hours and Let it go to town on that. All right. So this week was kind of sad for me. I need to make sure we honor Scout. So this is the first time I've ever recorded an episode of any Monarchist content without Scout by my side. So if you've been an eagle-eyed viewer or you're a listener from the beginning when we didn't have great audio, you would remember her bark or see her in the background. And yeah. So, Miss Scout, but we're here to talk to you about spring ball and the different changes that are going on with Old Dominion Athletics. The first change was announced recently. The scouting department goes from 3 people to 4 with the addition of Nick Louvier. Nick joins the program from Mississippi Gulf Coast, which for me is exciting because we have had a lot of luck with the JUCO ranks, especially in Mississippi. And to continue building those connections is just the smart thing to do, in my opinion. You guys have any thoughts?
Well, I'm pretty stoked about it. We've seen over the course of the last couple seasons the transformation of that scouting, we'll just say, department or division of the program, of going from essentially one individual to 3 individuals to now 4 individuals. And the investment has paid off tremendously. So I can only imagine with this one, Ricky and Hunter and all those guys have clearly figured out a formula here. And I'm excited to see what this addition does for the program.
Yeah, in addition to what Aaron said, like, you know, just having more bodies to be able to, you know, in the current landscape of college football, I just think that's important. And like you said, Mike, building those connections, we've seen like how well the Hutchison connection has worked for us, right? And so that's another JUCO connection. And then I guess we'll find out this week what happens with that JUCO ruling. I think that's on the 10th, but, you know, in my opinion, it could very well end up where JUCO just is not going to count anymore. And so that's just, you know, another reason, I think, to kind of continue to build those connections. And then it's an easy way for us to get experienced players, right? As we're going to continue to lose, you know, guys to other programs, to the Power Four, you know, with the NIL, the transfer portal. And, you know, you're going to need to backfill that sometimes with guys with experience. And, you know, JUCO is a great way to do that.
Yeah, and we saw our use of, like, our JUCO connections really well in the portal. A guy like Trey Hall, he was a great JUCO running back, ends up going to Ole Miss, gets lost in the shuffle of one of the best running back rooms in the country. So it's understandable that you kind of get lost in that shuffle. But he ends up coming here to help build our running back room to be even better than it was. Bubba Craig, offensive lineman from Arkansas. Another guy who kicked ass in JUCO, goes to Arkansas. Again, another good SEC program, not a good one, but an SEC program where they have a lot of talented players. Maybe they weren't used correctly, but he gets lost in the shuffle. We're lucky to have him here, and we get him for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you're a Monarch football fan, and paid a lot of attention in the last couple of years, and that you're hearing JUCO players, and you're kind of cringing a little bit. This is not the same JUCO recruiting that you had at the end of the Bobby Wilder era. This is a whole different level of JUCO recruiting. And one guy that we haven't mentioned yet is your new offensive coordinator, right? Cody Cook, also with that connection going back to Hutch, if I'm not misremembering here, really understanding the JUCO ranks and who's a guy that can go from JUCO and really help us out as a student athlete here and who's really not. Because you got to be able to pick the right guys.
I mean, and we've done that, right? We hit home runs. You saw that with Trey Brown, Corey Thomas last year. You go back to previous years. I mean, it's just we've done really, really well, especially the last 2 years recruiting JUCO. And I think, you know, they did the same this year.
Yeah, another guy I'd like to mention is Monchel Chapman. So in the 25 JUCO class, he was our top rated like target for JUCO linebackers. He ends up going to Mississippi State. And again, another guy got lost in the shuffle and ends up available to us. And we end up picking him up. This is a guy that could probably start next year. We don't know what's going to happen with Mario and Koa, but we know there's opportunities in this linebacker room to get playing time. Because you got Jaleel Culbreth on the outs, but we also play like six linebackers, which you kind of need now because of how we play. They're so active that they're going to get beat up and they need to be spelled a little bit. So he adds depth to the room, and it's that JUCO connection that brings him here. To add on to that, our new offensive line coach, he comes here from Tennessee, right? But before Tennessee, he was the offensive line coach at Hutch. Right,
I'm seeing a theme here.
Well, I mean, what are you gonna ask?
Was Mason Thrush at Hutch originally before? I thought he was maybe another one that was a JUCO and then went somewhere before coming to ODU. I might be wrong about that though.
Mason Thrush is a JUCO addition,
okay?
Yeah, he played for. You want to guess?
The new O-line coach.
Yeah, the new O-line coach, Phil Cercia, he recruited Mason Thrush to Hutch.
Okay.
So it's that whole – I don't know. So we talk about coaching hires and decisions. It is a very fraternal kind of thing. We've seen it through Ricky's tenure. He hires guys that he or someone else on staff has a relationship to. So we've hired a bunch of Kansas State guys. Connection right there is obvious. It's Blake Seiler. Penn State guys are his guys. So you had Cody Cook, Kansas State connection. He was at Hutch. Now we get Cercia, who's connected to Cody Cook. So it's a smart way to hire because you already know how these guys will work in that setting. You already have that connection. It just makes things easier because when you are making hires, if you don't know the person, you don't know what to expect and how they're going to act in an office or coaching environment. You can use that in any business setting, right, Aaron? I mean, you make a lot of hires.
Yeah.
It makes the decision that much easier if someone on your staff that's trustworthy can vouch for that guy.
It takes a significant variable out of the equation. For example, let's say offensive coordinator in the beginning of Ricky's tenure, it wasn't a place that we had a lot of consistency and success. I don't know how much, I think it's one of those things. Yeah. The more that you can know ahead of time and the more variables that you can remove from the equation, the higher likelihood of success you have.
Absolutely. All right. Other news, Old Dominion announced they will be playing a home-and-home with Charlotte. I think that one kicks off in 2027 at ODU.
That's correct.
This is the type of game we should be playing in the non-conference schedule. Obviously, you're going to play your one bye game against a P4 because you need that. It helps with the budget, helps with NIL, whatever. But the other two games other than the FCS should be a G5 or G6 program that you need wins. We've seen how playing a tough schedule can really make reaching bowl games and beat up the roster before conference play is not really beneficial to you. So I feel yep. like the more G6s we see on the schedule, the better.
It does. It's not only winnable, but it's travelable. So if you're an Old Dominion fan, it's not bad to go down to Charlotte for that away game. So I like the signing as well.
And it's going to be a necessary evil. I don't know. Maybe evil is not the right word. It's going to be necessary in future scheduling as we see, you know, the P4s probably schedule less and less, you know, G5s, FCSs. They might move to, you know, more conference games, et cetera. Obviously, you know, less P4 away games or games at Norfolk. And like to your point, you guys' point, like the 2027, I saw a lot of comments about, well, you know, Charlotte's not very good, and that is true. Right now they aren't very good, and I don't know that they're going to be very good in 26 and maybe not 27, but, you know, I mean, you're establishing these relationships now because you're going to need them in the future.
You know who else wasn't very good 3 years ago?
Indiana.
You could say that for a number of teams we've played over the years. Yep. I think when we scheduled South Carolina, they weren't very good. When we scheduled Wake Forest, they were the worst team in the ACC.
Change.
You never know what you're going to see. Like right now, Army is a very good football program. We're playing them in the future. Who knows what they're going to be in 2030 when we finally play? But 2027, we play. What is it? Norfolk State, Central Michigan, and Charlotte. Right now, we'll add a bye game soon enough, and that should be announced sometime before kickoff of the season. But
yep. And it's nice that game's in Charlotte because I can't imagine there's going to be a ton of Monarch fans that are going to be traveling to Central Michigan. So it's nice to – I mean, granted, that game, Charlotte, is here, but those are the types of places that you can end up that makes it a little bit more difficult to go on the road and cheer on your team.
Yeah.
One team I'd like to see us have like a long-term schedule with kind of like the Virginia Tech deal would be East Carolina. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, I mean, we do play them in 26, 29, 30, 31.
So we do have
a long-term schedule with them right now, but seeing that extended would be nice. I don't know if there's any other teams. I wouldn't mind playing Delaware, seeing them pop up on the schedule. That's an easy road trip, another game that kind of gives us an idea of where we're at, but isn't going to beat up our roster when we play them. You got any more thoughts on the schedules?
No, I was thinking about Delaware and how much money that Joe Flacco is throwing in there. People ought to watch out for Delaware.
They had a really successful jump. Yeah, they were bowl eligible, and because of not enough teams, they actually made a bowl game last year, and they played. They surprised me. I didn't expect the transition to go as smoothly as it did for them. They look like they're a contender in Conference USA. So, you know, it'd be good to get something with them.
I mean, that whole league was kind of upside down this year, I think. I mean, you had Kennesaw State going from the worst team in the conference to being conference champs, right?
Yep.
Well, they got that really dynamic guy behind, you know, taking snaps. And it's amazing what that can do for a team.
Yes. Yeah. Quarterback's very important. And Delaware's going to return their quarterback, who had a really good year in 25 and 26. So,
all right. Now, back to Old Dominion football. I guess if we're going to stay on the scheduling, if you're looking for one P4 road trip that you want to see added to the schedule in the next few years, what would it be?
Justice, you take this one first because
I'd probably say somewhere like NC State, right? Like where it's, you know, drivable, it's not far away. They're, you know, they're a decent team in the ACC, good measuring stick. So that's probably who I would pick, the Wolfpack. You know, they have a, you know, they're not the top level ACC, but they're you know, always near the top every year.
I just wonder if they're paying guarantees high enough to get Old Dominion on the schedule.
Yeah, that's a good point. They might not. I just, like, to me, like, it'd be nice if it's something drivable for our fans.
Yeah, maybe it'd be nice to go back to North Carolina and leave a better taste in our mouths.
That's what I was thinking about. We could put the final nail in the coffin and guarantee that Belichick never makes it into the Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, beat Bill Belichick. That's always a good time.
Yeah.
But I'd also wouldn't mind, like, seeing another football cathedral, like going to Knoxville, going somewhere cool, maybe SEC or Big Ten.
I'd just like to go to Knoxville so you could, you know, show us around.
That's right.
All your old haunts. It'd be a good trip.
Yeah, and they continually invest in that stadium, making it nicer every year. So I think it'd be a very nice trip for most Old Dominion fans. It's not that bad of a drive. It is long, but it's pretty straight. It's 64 to 81, and you're there. All right, spring ball is coming up. We're starting to see the team do their workouts in the weight room. We're seeing who the was it the king of the jungle of the week? Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, it's been Quinn, what, 2 weeks in a row, I think, on there?
Yeah, this week – Quinn Hennickel, Ladarian Mentor, and Chris Boykins were the kings of the jungle for week two. Quinn obviously taking a very good leadership role in the weight room already. That's great to see. But that kind of goes into our next segment where we're going to talk about the position. There's going to be a lot of position battles this spring with the turnover we saw. Most of them are going to be on offense because we do have a lot of defensive players returning. A lot of starters returning on the defensive side. So on the offensive side this spring, what position battle are you going to pay the most attention to? I'll give Aaron the layup here.
I mean, I think the absolute – for me, because I've never been able to do it, it's a slam dunk as opposed to a layup. It's got to be quarterback. It's what every fan is going to talk about. It's what every fan is talking about. Every fan that understands what's going on at ODU and every fan that doesn't understand. You've got Quinn, obviously, finished the season with a bowl game. Really, really showed his toughness, his determination, and ability to get the job done and to bring that team together. Ryan Huff is back, who is a very, very capable and from what we've seen, probably was the most accurate passer on the team last season. And now you've got Jackson Potter is coming in. So I think you've got three guys that are going to really battle it out. And it'll be a true quarterback battle. I mean, no one's been named the starter. No one's going to be named the starter for a while. At least in the past, that's how Ricky has done things. We won't know anything for a while. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Speaking of the weight room, each of them have been challenged on different things to work on before the fall. Quinn, they want to work on his accuracy and his deep ball. Understandably so. He's a great athlete, but if he can become a better passer, he's going to be one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the G6. Potter, the new guy from Washington State, he needs to work on his ball placement. He's a big, big dude. I mean, we haven't seen a quarterback this size since probably Hayden Wolf.
Was he like 6'4", 6'5"?
6'5". He does have some functional mobility. And then you have Ryan Huff, the young guy. If you've seen him, he definitely needs to put some muscle on his body if he's going to withstand a full college football season. And he needs to work on his athleticism a bit. But if you have a chance to watch this guy play, you'll know after five throws that the guy has a lot of arm talent. It's going to be a very interesting battle.
And it, like, going to the bowl game when he came in for that play for Quinn, like, you know, I think most fans would have expected them to run the ball, but like they have enough faith in Ryan. They let him throw the ball, you know, in a goal line situation. So, I mean, I think that just kind of, to your point, proves that the guy is talented, has the arm talent, and the staff trusts him.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've ever had a QB battle that has three talent, like guys with so different skill sets, but also high talent. Like, this is the best quarterback battle we've ever seen in Old Dominion. And I don't think that's really going too crazy yet on a limb.
I think that's an accurate statement.
At least in the most, you know, recent years. I mean, maybe you could go back to, you know, way, way back when we had DeMarco and Taylor or something. But, yeah, I mean, any time in recent history, for sure, the most talented quarterback room.
Before we go on, since you said it.
Well, I want to say a note on that because that wasn't a true battle. I don't think they were giving
Taylor. Back then, no. But I was just thinking from a talent perspective.
It was a talented QB room, but I'm talking about an actual QB battle. Like, there's none. We've never had one with this much talent on the roster.
Before we move on to the next thing, since you said the guy's name, for folks who don't know, be paying attention. Sometime after the Super Bowl, not too long, it should be, we'll be having our episode drop with Taylor Heinicke. So stay tuned. It was a great conversation that Mike and I had the opportunity to have with Taylor. It was fun. It was informative. You'll probably hear a couple stories that you've never heard before. And you'll definitely hear some news that you've never heard before. So stay tuned.
And hopefully, from what we talked, it might not be the last episode we do with Taylor. So hopefully it's the start of a new regular guest. Because we'd all love to see more of Taylor. We're all happy that he's moved back to the 757. And we'll get to all see more of him around Old Dominion. All right. Well, if we're doing news, Aaron, we also are in the middle of a transition period with ODAF.
That's correct.
Part of that is our website. Right now, we're the prideofodu.com. That will be transitioning away. And we have this little... So,
exciting.
ODUmonarchist.com will be back. It'll be your place for everything you've come to go to Pride of ODU for. Behind the Shield, our podcast, David's blogs. We're going to try to continue to build on it, but that will be our new home in the near future. So keep an eye out for that. We don't really have a launch date, but we have a launch expectation of sometime in March. So
that's right. And you can go ahead and start building the muscle memory by typing in odumonarchist.com. It will take you to the websites that you use right now, but go ahead and start doing it.
Yep. All right, continuing on. Justice, what is the battle that you're most excited for? If it's quarterback, you can just say that, but...
It's not quarterback. For me, it's offensive line, just because we got to replace all five starters. I think, you know, I'm excited by what they brought in. And the transfer portal and JUCO, plus the guys we have already on the roster. And like, that's where it all starts for the offense, right? It doesn't matter if it's Quinn or Jackson or Ryan, if the offensive line sucks, right? That's just the way football works. And yeah, I'm just excited to see, can we get an offensive line that is as good or even better than we had a year ago? That's probably the thing that's most exciting for me. I think, I don't even know if that would make concerns the right word, but like, I feel like we're going to find a quarterback. We're going to find receivers. Like, I feel like there's so much talent, but all that doesn't really matter unless, you know, we find five guys on that offensive line that can block and be effective like they were a year ago. I mean, last year, I think at the end of the season, we ended up with one of eight or nine teams that started the same offensive line the whole season, and that's pretty remarkable. It'd be amazing if we can do that again, but that's a pretty hard feat. But yeah, that's probably the one I'm most excited to see, just because I feel like if it's not good, it's going to break the season, and if it's really good, it just kind of it helps all those other things that we need to be successful.
Let me ask you guys a question. And it may be way too early. Y'all know the personnel much better than I do. Could you take a best guess of what you think that offensive line will look like yet based upon the roster, or is it way too early to tell?
I'm going to say it's way too early. There's a couple guys I could probably say are going to start, like Logan Cox. We saw him come in the bowl game for Zach Barlev and his injury, and he played really well. Is he going to be left tackle? I don't know. Maybe he's a right tackle. But they brought in a lot of dudes, and it's going to be battles at every single position because no one is coming back with any claim or stake where they're saying, I already earned this. You got to earn it now. I'm excited that this is the first offseason I can remember where we said we've needed a center the last 4 years. We got one, a great one last year in Ryan Joyce. But this is the first time I can remember where we got two dudes that are going to make it a real true battle. Mason Thrush comes in from Hutch. Really played well there. But we also bring in the kid from Elon, Braden Walker. He's had a great career so far. Can he make the transition to FBS? Can Mason make the transition to FBS? Those two are going to battle for that job, and it's going to be really interesting to watch and how that kind of affects the rest of the O-line. Because if you don't have a center, we've seen our team struggle, even with good – we had good left tackles and right tackles, but if center position is not there, you could be in trouble. And that's the one position I'm most excited about on the O-line.
And for those who have concern about – guys being able to make that transition from FCS. I mean, Ryan Joyce was the guy who came from Fordham. So the way that college football is, especially at the G5 level, you've got to be able to identify guys that are at that level who have performed really well, have had the opportunity to play. I think we were talking about this with baseball. You can tell if guys can play regardless of level sometimes. And center is one of those positions where it's not completely about the physicality, which it is, but there's a lot up here. There's a lot to process at that position.
And to Braden's credit, CAA is a higher level of football than Fordham plays in the FCS. So he has been challenged more than I would say Ryan was before he got to Old Dominion.
And, you know, that, like you said, that battle at center, I think, you know, we might still see them both, right? One of them wins the center job. The other might, you know, move to one of the guard spots. To Aaron's earlier question, like, I think I could probably name you who I think the five guys might be. But to Mike's point, like, only one of those might be right, you know. We brought in a lot of talent, a lot of guys. I think there's enough talent that we brought in to go with what the guys that we already have returning that I'm not so worried. I don't think it's going to be like a disaster or anything, but it's going to be a very competitive battle in the spring, and definitely something, probably one of the, you know, first things I'm going to be watching for. But I think, you know, to Aaron's point earlier, like most fans, you know, the quarterbacks get all the headlines, right? That's who they're interested in. So, but yeah,
I would say
offensive line should be a good one.
I would expect Bubba Craig to start somewhere on this O-line. But yeah, the other thing that you talked about, what, we were one of eight teams to start all five O-linemen all season long.
Yep.
Injuries happen on the O-line every year. Someone's going to get hurt. You never know who. But it's such a physical position that injuries are going to happen. So that changes, that can change the dynamics of who's playing and who's not. Hopefully we can have another healthy year, but that's not really, really realistic to expect when only eight teams had it last year. More likely you're going to be one of the other 122 teams that weren't healthy on the O-line at some spot. So I'm glad that they brought in a lot of experienced depth. Guys that have a lot of snaps behind them. You got the two guys from Lincoln who were starting left and right tackles that played really well there. You got the Elon and North Alabama transfers. Bubba Craig comes in. Like, there's just so much experience on this coming in this O-line, and you already have a lot of guys returning that have their own talent. So it's exciting. Yeah. There's going to be another battle at receiver because, again, we don't have any returning starters there. And that's a position I'll have my eye on offensively because we've heard a lot of great things about Josh Rodriguez. We've seen it in practice, but we haven't seen it in games yet. And who else, if he is, let's say we'll pencil Josh in as one of the starters, who are the other two? Or do we get more – do we go more into depth and play like six guys?
I think you've got the ability to do that. I mean, I have no clue. I think there's as many questions this year as there were last year. I think what we do know is we've got talent. So if that podcast that I won't say the name of says that there's no talent in the wide receiver room again this year, they'd be wrong again this year. It's a difficult to know what it looks like right now, you know, who knows, with the exception of one or two guys.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, to your point, Aaron, I think we have talent. But for me, like, it's like I maybe have more questions than I did last year because, like, I don't know, like, you know, I could watch some JUCO games and see Trey and Ja'Cory and, like, you know, and I felt really good about those guys. I feel really good about the guys we have coming in. But I've watched him less, so maybe there's more, a little more uncertainty. But I think we have, we've the guys we brought in and the guys we have there. I have no doubts that we'll, you know, find at least three guys that are gonna step up and perform really well. I mean, you bring in J.J. Harrell, former Mississippi State recruit, Zion Agnew, former ECU guy. Those are probably the two, you know, guys we bring in that are the highest profile, I think. And then, like you said, Josh Rodriguez, he was phenomenal last year in practice, man. Like, I think he would have gave some of the guys last year a run for their money in terms of starting if he was eligible.
This is a crazy thing. So this class of receivers, of how talented they are, four of them make up the top seven commits we've ever had on 247. B.J. Bedgood, high school recruit, he's number two all-time. Number five, Zialis Blackman, another high school wide receiver recruit. He's fifth all-time. Braden Maivela, he's sixth all-time, another high school. J.J. Harrell is the highest-rated JUCO player we've ever had. He's seventh. So we have four of our best-ever recruits coming in this class at the receiver position. Adding on to guys like Josh Rodriguez and Sidney Mbanasor and TJ Johnson, who are already here and show they have capability and talent to play this position.
That's pretty good, Bob.
This is a deep, talented room. Obviously, you need them to get some chemistry with the quarterback, whoever wins that job. You need them to understand choice routes and when they're running the right ones and get to learn the offense. We've never seen this much talent in the wide receiver room. Never.
Never.
Will they develop is the question. Now, we've had developed more talent in the past. Obviously, you have those classes with, like, Duhart, Fulgham, guys like that. Yeah. Those were developed guys.
Pascal.
Coming in, they weren't, like, those highly regarded players. They developed here.
Yeah, I mean, Fulgham was a walk-on, right?
Say again?
Travis Fulgham was a walk-on.
Oh, yeah. And then you heard in our conversation with David Washington, Zach Pascal, is like those guys at the beginning were just – I mean, they had raw talent, but were not – they were not anything like what they ended up to be. You know, they worked hard, but it's exciting. We just got to get the ball to them.
The other thing I'm most interested in tracking this offseason is going to be who steps up as a leader. I think we can all agree that Zach Barleff really took ownership of last year's team. We saw it with how he called out guys that quit at Media Day. Like, he was a true leader, and the guys kind of rallied around him. Guys rallied around Colton. Like, that was a – that team just had good chemistry, and you could see it early on. They all believed in Jeremy Mack. Like, that's another guy that's going to be tough to replace. He changed how we defended. But who will step up and become the leader on this roster?
I mean, you think about it, we lost on defense too, right? With, you know, Chris Trinidad gone. I mean, I think, you know, Mario Easterly probably comes to mind, like someone that's been around and you would assume like going to take a big step up in that role. But yeah, certainly opportunities for those guys.
I would assume Mario. I would also assume Koa, with him being back. He's been around long enough. And kind of the work that he's had to put in to be able to get back to be who he is. I think the guys will see that, and then kind of action speaking louder. But he's also, despite being hurt and not playing all season, he was right there in the mix with everybody. He didn't disappear. So I think I think those are two guys that make a lot of sense. And on a whole nother subject, I had the opportunity the other night to go over with Kieran Donahue to the new athletic dining facility. And Kieran was telling me that that facility, and we'll have, Mike and I will have an episode on that at some point, but that facility is essentially open for two meals a day with breakfast and dinner. And he said that Mario has been in there for both breakfast and dinner, like every single day. Like, the guy is arguably, he's one of the highest profile athletes on campus these days. And just to be around and be visible and be part of all that type of stuff, I think he's a guy that naturally steps up into that role.
Yeah. All right. There's a couple more battles that could be interesting. One is at kicker. It's a position that we had some issues with last year. I'm very interested to see who ends up becoming our field goal kicker in 2026.
And we brought in Nelms from FAU.
Yeah, I think that's the only.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Eichner, who he came in a pressure situation after we struggled a bit and was fairly consistent, but from shorter distances. So the real question is, can you get through a whole season with a guy who's limited, you know, limited length strength wise? So that'll be an interesting one to see play out, because it's more of a more important position than I think a lot of people realize.
And we also just got that a freshman, right? That's committed recently. I don't remember his name, but
yeah, he's a walk-on kicker. Again, like, I'm not going to expect any freshmen to really play that much here, unless we're talking about like on the defensive side or at like the skill positions. Like, there's certain positions you never see freshmen play. O-line's one of them. D-line is rare, but we've started to see that more and often with how they've recruited at that position really well. But O-line and I think specialist and kind of quarterback are those kind of those positions you rarely see true freshmen play it. But yeah, there's a couple options. So you got Andrew Nelms, Eichner, and then you have Mikhail Ikalev. I think he did some kickoffs last year. He started at Averett and transferred here last year. Him and Nelms both have big legs. So can they find a consistency? Nathaniel, he's going to be a redshirt senior. He's a smaller guy at 5'9", but if he knows where he needs to work on, maybe he can find more power this offseason.
Yeah.
We don't have to kind of pigeonhole him as a short, like, consistent kicker from like 40 yards and in. He could gain some strength there and get a bigger leg. You never know.
Yeah, I don't know. Jared Brown, if you're listening to this episode, drop it in the comments on what you think about kickers being able to do that in the course of one offseason. Mike, let's talk running back. That's one that I'm interested in. Obviously, Devin Roche. Devin's back, and we saw the light bulb go off and with Devin in the back, I'll just say third of the season or so, and really became the guy on a number of different levels, not only on the field, but from a leadership perspective. Let's talk about that position.
There's a lot of talent in this room. I think we actually upgraded this offseason. You got Devin coming back. You got Mark I coming back. You got Troy Marquez, who's a very talented walk-on, coming back. Out of the high school ranks, you got CJ Jackson, who's really played well at Green Run. Could be a type of guy that the speed type of back that you can come in and maybe make those type of plays we saw by Traquan last year, where, you know, he's just kind of a change of pace guy right now. But I really like both portal pickups. Trey Hall was one of the best. I mean, he was the number one running back out of JUCO when he went to Ole Miss, right? Or top three or something like that. Fairly highly rated running back that just kind of got lost in the shuffle at Ole Miss. And then Hunter Patterson, former track athlete, ran track at West Liberty for a couple of years, ends up going to football and just becoming absolutely dynamic for West Liberty. The guy's got real track speed. Who knows what he can do, but there's a lot of options here with a lot of different talent in this running back room. Obviously, I think Dev is going to be the guy, but how do we fill in those times where he needs a break or we want to do a change of pace? That's going to be where the opportunities are for everyone else, assuming Devin can stay healthy.
I'm really excited to see Hunter Patterson be used in the passing game. That was a big part of his game at West Liberty, and I think that can add, you know, another level of to our offense, another weapon. He caught a lot of balls there. And like you said, he's fast. So I think, like, you figure out ways to get to the ball to him in space, whether that's in the backfield or maybe even line up at a slot, you know, from time to time, the slot receiver position. But, yeah, we got a lot of talent at running back. And I think should be in a big year for those guys.
So another question for you guys. Last year, obviously, we've already talked about it. The offensive line play was – extremely good and extremely consistent. He had a quarterback who was very dynamic, primarily with his legs, but Colton could throw the ball enough to keep defenses honest there. And our running backs were able to really give teams fits. Okay, so it sounds like we've got the talent in the running back room to be able to do that as well this year. But what we talked about earlier with regards to putting together a new offensive line, you've got the choice of a new quarterback. Does the running back room make those things easier to do, or is it all predicated on the offensive line coming together for those other two positions to have success?
I think this offense, the way it's built, if you have good running backs who can get to the second level, you're going to have that regardless of how talented the O-line is. Because of how the offense is just ran. This is a running-based offense that spreads the whole defense out. We're going to have opportunities to make plays as running backs, no matter kind of where we're at as an offensive line. The question is, how good are we at passing the ball? You need a good O-line there. You need the receivers to get open, and you need the quarterbacks to throw consistently enough where they can have a passing game. Because we saw – I think the first year we implemented this offense with Grant, we were a really good running team that year, but we struggled passing the ball. I'm not worried about being able to run the ball next year. It's what's the passing game going to be like and how dynamic is it? If we can have a dynamic passing game, we'll have the same success no matter who the quarterback is. I've seen some concerns about two of our three guys don't have the mobility that Colton had. From our talks with the staff, they think the mobility is kind of, the quarterback run occasionally, but you don't need to do it as often as we did last year if they can complete those medium and short range passes with more accuracy. One thing that gets overlooked last year is we did struggle in the mid-range passing game a lot. If we can improve there, you won't need the quarterback to run as much because the defense still needs to play you honest. and can't just sell out for the run if he can beat you with his arm. So I don't know if you need to get hung up on having a mobile quarterback this year or not. The O-line needs to do their job and give the quarterback a little bit of time to go through his progressions. But the mobility is kind of – I don't know if that's the end-all, be-all for this offense.
To your point, Aaron, like and like Mike said, the running game, I think, like, the thing that, like, we saw last year that I think other – we either need – you have to have additional threats is the explosiveness, right? We saw a lot of explosive plays, particularly from the running backs. And I think that's generated by either, A, the defense having to worry about the passing game, or B, you know, last year, maybe not just the passing game, they also had to worry about Colton too, right? He was someone they had to account for in the running game. And so the bottom line is you have to have those other threats, whether it is passing or the mobile quarterback, to be able to, I think, you know, have those explosive plays. And I think that was a big part of why we had so many explosive plays last year, right, was that there were just other threats the defense had to worry about, and it opens up the lanes and the holes on the second level for those running backs.
Yeah, I that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you look at NFL guys, for example, you've got a guy like Lamar Jackson, who obviously has got elite running ability that has to be accounted for, and that probably helps him out in this passing game, although that's gotten, you know, progressively better. But then you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who's an elite passer. He is not an elite runner, but he can run enough to hurt you if you don't honor it. So you can win either way. It'll be interesting to see. Sorry to suck us back into that whole quarterback discussion, but it'll be interesting to see what that formula ends up being this year, what we choose it to be.
Yeah, you really just need to keep the defense honest. It doesn't really need to be with a mobile quarterback. That's where that whole passing thing comes into play. If you're completing 65% of your passes, it doesn't really matter if the quarterback can run. You need to keep the defense honest with a strong passing attack. If we're not going to have the mobile quarterback, obviously there's a chance that we do, but you need to keep the defense honest. Because if we're going to have 7-8 guys in the box, it doesn't really matter how good your run game is and how good your run blocking is. It's going to be tough to run on against that many guys.
Yep.
So that's where that kind of that defensive honesty comes into play. If we can make them defend us honestly, where they weren't able to cheat up, yeah, that's going to be the big question, is how honest our defense is going to have to play us. And I think with our wide receiver room and the arm talent we have in this quarterback room, that's not going to be an issue.
I'm encouraged. I think one marker we can just put out there is the bowl game. It was only Quinn's second start. And although he got into some games this year, really, I'll just say they're kind of meaningless snaps. He wasn't really able to run the offense. Most of it was just kind of handing the ball off for the most part. So the guy didn't have an opportunity to do a whole heck of a lot, showed some promise in that last game. And we know the other two guys have talent as well. So I think the program's in good hands. It'll be interesting to see what it ends up, you know, who rises to the top.
Yeah. There's some question marks on the defensive side. You got some guys we got to replace. But overall, what we did to return as many guys as we did, I think it was 9 of the top 20 snap getters are returning. We graduated 7 of those other guys. So it's not like we lost them all to the portal. But you did lose some talent in like Jerome Carter to the portal. However, if there's one guy you can trust to replace dudes, it's Remington Repstock.
And this like feels like the first year he doesn't have to replace everybody.
I'm really excited to see who kind of steps up this year on the defensive side, but there's not that many guys we needed to look out for versus prior years. Like, this is the most talent we've ever had returning on defense.
Yeah.
Hats off to those student athletes decided that they wanted to stay Monarchs. Hats off to the staff who's built good relationships with their players. So those players have trust and confidence in them. Hats off to the student athletes of bonding with each other who want to stay and play with each other. Hats off to Ron Moses for working tireless hours, as Mike and I had an opportunity to see behind the scenes of, and you're just doing what needed to be done in the course of that crazy essential month at the conclusion of the season. Good job by all, really. I mean, I'm excited about that defense, and I know that Blake Seiler is probably pretty happy with what he's got coming back and what he's got coming in.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Ron was doing a lot of the contracts. So with NIL rev share, you got to give good competitive offers to these guys or they're going to walk out the door, especially after the season we had last year. A lot of guys had opportunities to go into the portal and decided to stay here. So hats off to all the staff at Old Dominion for making it the successful year that it was and bringing as much talent as we did back. Anything else you guys want to cover before we call this quits?
I do. It's not football related, and I know we'll plug it in a couple episodes between now and then, but for those who are watching this on February the 19th, Thursday evening at Afterglow, we've got our third installment of the main event. Head coach Mike Jones of men's basketball will be there. We'll do a Q&A session with Mike. And then after the conclusion of that, we're going to watch the women's basketball game at Afterglow. So always a good time there. Thursday, February the 19th at 6 p.m. So come on out. You go to any of our social media, ODU Monarch at ODU Monarchist. You can see the advertisements there. I know there's a Facebook event out there. You don't have to RSVP, but if you say you're going, it'll give you the reminder as our weeks get busy. It'll remind you probably on Wednesday, like, hey, make sure you show up.
Yeah, and as usual, we'll have a couple giveaways. We try to make everything a little bit interesting. So if you come,
everybody likes free stuff.
Yeah, if you come, you have a chance to walk away with something you didn't have when you walked in. So we'd love to have you out there, support this basketball program, learn. I mean, you get the chance to ask him questions straight. What other opportunities do you have to do this?
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Absolutely. It should be a good time. I'm looking forward. I already got my question in mind, so I'm looking forward to coming and asking.
It will be. I think the other thing I want to throw out there is Pensacola is like a month away for the Sun Belt tournament for both men's and women's basketball. Obviously, it's been a challenging season to date. Last night, we saw the team that we thought that we would see kind of all along. Only time will tell and see how they finish the season, but myself, Mike, Justice, we'll all be down in Pensacola. We'll be bringing coverage of the Sun Belt Tournament, Monarch Basketball, just like last year, hopefully even more. So I don't know that there's going to be anyone else down there covering the stuff for the Monarchs. I think the local media is not going, so we'll make sure to have that completely suitcased for you guys. I'm sure there'll end up being a Bucky's visit on the way because they got cheap gas and they got good food. Yeah, we'll be doing that for you guys.
And clean restrooms.
Super clean restrooms and lots of them. And beef jerky.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to the drive as much as the trip to Pensacola. I mean, it's last year we had a lot of fun. And men's basketball was why it was fun. They went on that nice four-game run. I was hoping maybe we could get down there a little bit later in the week. But we'll just have to wait and see how they finish. Hopefully they can get on a run here so we don't have to be down there on Monday or Tuesday of the beginning.
Hey, the silver lining, Mike, is we get a chance to get you back at Whataburger. We'll get a chance to go to some of my old haunts, McGuire's. That was a great meal, and it's close to the stadium. Steven, I don't think you've ever had the chance to go to McGuire's, so that'll be fun.
I've never been to Whataburger. I mean, other than, like, the one in Newport News, that's not the same place.
There's a Whataburger in Newport News?
There is.
It's different. It's a local mom-and-pop's place.
Okay.
It's not. Gotcha. You don't need to go out of your way for that one.
No, but it'll be a good time. Really, really looking forward to it, regardless of the challenges so far. The interesting thing about it, man, is it doesn't take much. You get hot and you go on a run. That's all that it takes. So if we can finish the season strong in the next, what do we have, 5 games left, something like that, 5-6 games, hey, we'll see. We'll be there.
Yeah.
To get us back to the football, I was just going to say spring practice, what, about a month and a half away? Starts end of March or so. And so, you know, I'll be there during the week for the media coverage, covering practice, writing articles, and bringing those interviews.
And we should have some interviews with the new staff at some point. We just need to get a good time for them where they're not super busy so they can sit down and tell us about what they're bringing to Old Dominion football this year. So we'll work on that. I will say keep an eye out. ODAF will have some news in the near future regarding the transition of the Pride of ODU to Old Dominion. So just keep an eye out for that. It's all very exciting, and it will impact your access to Behind the Shield. So keep an eye out. It's all positive stuff.
I will say, though, that it will not change our relationship, our independence, and how we cover things and do things.
No. If anything, it's going to give us more access to bring you more inside information. So if you like Behind the Shield, I think you'll like it even more over this next year. So keep riding with us, and we'll keep working hard for you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.